Funding for Capital Report is provided by the following. A grant from the law firm of Searcy, Denny, Scarola, Barnhart, and Shipley. Supporting public radio and taking time to care. On the web at searcylaw.com. Tallahassee Regional Airport, offering service through Delta Airlines and Delta Connection partner ExpressJet, with direct flights from Tallahassee to Atlanta connecting to over 315 destinations worldwide. Fares and information available online at delta.com. And from Bryant Miller Olive, a law firm practicing government law, consulting and litigation, and public finance, serving Florida for over 40 years. Bryant Miller Olive, online at bmolaw.com. WFSU-FM, Tallahassee. From the state capitol, Florida Public Radio brings you Capitol Report.
An expansion of Florida's private school voucher program is headed for the House after an emotional hearing today.
I am opposed to taking nearly $1 billion away from our public schools and giving it to parents so they can send their children to private religious schools.
Also tonight, emotions likewise run high as lawmakers revive the controversial debate about abortion-related issues.
But I'm not going to inject my views on the rest of the population. I just find the bill offensive on so many levels and for so many reasons.
We'll also talk technology, possible changes to Florida's hearsay laws, and preview the upcoming budget battles at the Capitol. On this final day of the fourth week of the Florida lawmaking session, I'm Tom Flanagan, and this is Capitol Report. A bill significantly expanding Florida's school voucher program is headed for the House floor, even though a similar proposal was withdrawn from the Senate. That led many to believe the issue was dead for this session. As Jessica Palumbo reports, a committee hearing today revived a familiar and heated debate on education and religion.
Republican supporters want to increase funding to the state's corporate tax scholarship program, they say, for parents who feel public school has failed their children. Parents like Tallahassee mother of five, Allison Hotchstedler.
My 11-year-old son, that's Gant, spent 3 years at an A-rated public school right down the street, which we love for our younger son, but he experienced bullying there as well for 3 years.
Hotchstedler says the harassment escalated to a breaking point in fifth grade.
We had had someone punch him in the jaw in the cafeteria, as well as then another girl choked him to try to get the last chip. It just wasn't working for us.
She says that's why she wants to use corporate tax scholarship money, or vouchers, to send her son to the private Christ Classical Academy, where she struggles to afford the tuition.
We know God will supply, but maybe it's through Step Up for Students.
Step Up for Students is the nonprofit that administers the scholarship program. The bill now heading to the full House would tack on voucher funding in excess of an existing 15% annual increase. The measure also expands eligibility to middle-class families by more than doubling the qualifying family income to just under $60,000. Education Appropriations Subcommittee Chairman Eric Frezen says more funding is needed to address growing demand. But Democrats like Fort Pierce Representative Larry Lee say that money should go toward improving public schools.
And I just believe within my heart that we can do more. But I think we're giving up. We're giving up too easy.
Lee says the program was originally intended to help only the poorest students escape failing schools.
The Bible tells us the poor will always be with us.
While Lee invoked the Bible to make his argument, several of the bill's opponents bemoaned that its passage could expand the use of public taxpayer money to fund religious education. And Maitland Democratic Representative Karen Castor-Dental, a teacher herself, says she's seen several public school students go to a private school for a couple of years and come back, only to be further behind their classmates than when they left. Castor-Dental also chastised Frezen for attaching the voucher bill to a standalone measure changing the scholarship program for students with disabilities.
And I think putting these two voucher programs together is simply a Hail Mary, and I urge you all to vote against this bill.
Frezen fired back, accusing Democrats of being intellectually dishonest by supporting public scholarship funding only when it goes to private preschools and universities.
But somehow God forbid a public dollar in the K-12 system be utilized by a parent's choice.
During the debate, God wasn't far from the mind of Ocala Republican Representative Charlie Stone either. He says parents should have another place to turn because public schools are getting worse.
We've removed God out of the public school system for the most part. Well, I don't know that I can agree with that policy. We've decreased the amount of discipline that is allowed in the school system. Well, I don't believe that's a really good policy either, and I think we're seeing the results of it by some of the bullying.
If the measure passes the full House, Democrats say it won't be with their party's support. For Florida Public Radio, I'm Jessica Palumbo.
A couple of abortion-related measures are moving in the Florida legislature, while others appear stalled. Sasha Cordner reports there was much impassioned testimony before lawmakers.
Lakeland Republican Senator Kelly Stargell is the Senate sponsor of the Florida's Unborn Victims of Violence Act.
Basically what it does, it says if a violent act happens against a woman and she is pregnant, it causes the loss of her unborn child, it is a separate offense for the loss of the unborn child as well.
Remy Lee is a huge backer of the bill. She says she remembers how happy she was when she found out she was pregnant. She'd even picked out a name for her baby, Memphis Remington. But when she was around 6 weeks pregnant, her ex-boyfriend John Weldon gave her a pill to terminate the pregnancy that was disguised as an antibiotic.
I've been dubbed the abortion pill victim by the media, and it's a moniker I don't really like because I don't feel like I'm the abortion pill victim. Memphis is the one that's the abortion pill victim. He's the one that paid the ultimate price and isn't here, although he was really wanted to be here.
So she says this bill needs to become law to help pregnant women avoid the same feeling she experiences every day, especially since there's nothing in statute to get justice for victims like her.
On that Easter Sunday, as I lay bleeding in the hospital, Hillsborough County Sheriff's detectives went to Mr. Weldon's house, and they had him in the back of their squad car, and they interviewed him, and he admitted to poisoning me. He admitted that his intent was to kill our unborn child. And there was nothing that they could do. They had to let him go back in his house.
Despite some concerns about knowledge and intent by Democrats, the measure cleared the Rules Committee on a mostly party-line vote. Meanwhile, a House panel vetted a measure aimed at changing the state's abortion law to essentially make it illegal to terminate a viable fetus that can survive outside the womb through standard medical care. Under present Florida law, it's only illegal to perform an abortion after the third trimester or 24 weeks of pregnancy. Bill supporter Catherine Van Zandt is the wife of Keystone Heights Republican Representative Charles Van Zandt, who for years has been filing bills to ban all abortions in Florida. She says as a counselor of women, she hears heart-wrenching stories all the time.
And the most heartbreaking situations that I have with these women is when they come to me and say, Mrs. Van Zandt, I have a secret I have never told anybody else, but I've had an abortion or two or three, and I can't get that baby out of my mind. That baby stays in front of me. Don't put the women you care about in the position of having to live with the death of a viable baby.
But Barbara Devane, representing the Florida chapter of the National Organization of Women, or Florida Now, disagrees.
As a woman who's had an abortion and has a very sane mind, no mental health problems, no alcohol problems, I wave in opposition.
Democrats on the panel also spoke out against the bill, saying they don't see why the bill is needed. According to the State Department of Health, more than 71,000 abortions were performed in Florida last year, none of which were performed for a woman in her third trimester. Still, the measure passed the House Health and Human Services Committee 12-5 with Democrats opposed. It has one more stop before heading to the floor. Meanwhile, its Senate companion, which was stalled in its first committee, has its next hearing Tuesday. For Florida Public Radio, I'm Sasha Cordner.
Still to come on Capitol Report, the Florida House and Senate don't differ much when it comes to their respective budgets, but in the areas where they are apart, the differences are pretty major.
They have more funding in the Springs program than we currently have, but I think they're very manageable differences that we can work out.
Is Florida ripe for a change in its laws regarding hearsay evidence, especially when it comes to domestic violence cases?
Hearsay is excluded under our system because of concerns about the lack of reliability.
Florida lawmakers consider some environmental law reforms, although their passage is by no means certain. And as lawmakers work to bring the state's laws into sync with new technology, some experts say they should be taking a more proactive approach.
Support for Capital Report is provided by the Able Trust, encouraging businesses to hire workers with disabilities. Information about the benefits of hiring people with a wide range of disabilities is available on the web at lookatmyability.org. The Able Trust. Empowerment. Education. Employment.
The Florida House and Senate are $400 million apart in their state spending plan proposals for the upcoming fiscal year. That's a lot closer than the chambers have been in recent years, thanks to an influx of cash from a recovering economy. Lynn Hatter takes a look at two areas where the chambers differ: water projects and school construction.
Last summer, Central Florida was awash in water. Lake Okeechobee overflowed its banks, and the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers steered that polluted overflow into the St. Lucie and Caloosahatchee Rivers. The results included health warnings, toxic algae blooms, and animal die-offs.
Early July, we saw about 50% dead, and then we went out a few weeks later, and then it was about 99% dead.
Florida Oceanographic Society scientist Vincent Encomio says he and other researchers dubbed summer of 2013 the lost summer, as water-based businesses in the region suffered an economic shock. Encomio says that includes all of the Indian River Lagoon's oysters dying.
And then we confirmed with other scientists that are doing work on oysters in the St. Lucie River that when they had gone out later, they had not found any live oysters.
Now the Senate is poised to steer more than $225 million into projects rerouting water flow in the region, including cleaning up what gets dumped into the St. Lucie and Caloosahatchee. Everglades Foundation ecologist Stephen Davis says the projects include finishing a bridge on the Tamiami Trail, which dams up water so it can't flow into the Everglades.
By fixing the problem, we alleviate that issue and can restore the quality of water and the quality of life for those that live along those water bodies. And that's the message that we try to convey.
The Everglades is important, Davis says, because it also recharges Florida's aquifer, where the state gets most of its drinking water. The House, though, plans to spend about $33 million less on those projects. But Senate Appropriations Committee Chairman Joe Negron says there are bigger differences between the two chambers.
On higher education, we have a little more money in the Florida Residents Access Grants than the House does. They have more funding in the Springs program than we currently have, but I think they're very manageable differences that we can work out.
For generations, Wakulla Springs has served as a tourist spot, with visitors coming to enjoy its clear, cool waters. But in recent years, its famous glass-bottom boats haven't been getting much use, and those crystal-clear waters have turned foggy due to an influx of pollutants. As the Senate attends to water flow in Central and South Florida, the House is proposing to put $50 million toward restoring Florida Springs. The Senate figure is around $20 million. Meanwhile, when it comes to education, both chambers have different ideas for how to fund the construction and maintenance of the state's public schools, colleges, and universities. It's called Public Education Capital Outlay, or PECO, and PECO funding has been scarce in recent years due to drastic decreases in the trust fund revenue and the amount of money being used to pay off already completed projects. The House wants to spend nearly $600 million on school construction projects in the upcoming fiscal year, with a big chunk of that going to charter schools. But Florida School Board Association President Wayne Blanton says the backlog of maintenance projects is so large, more money is needed.
If we could get a consistent amount of dollars in the range of $350 to $400 million a year, that would allow us to not only keep our schools up, but would allow us to start replacing some of those older schools, which quite frankly cost more than a new school.
The House arrived at its PICO budget using a proposal from State Agriculture Commissioner Adam Putnam, which diverts some business tax revenue into the PICO fund. The Senate's PICO budget is more than $270 million less than the House's, but that chamber's leaders say they're open to taking a look at the House PICO funding plan as negotiations begin to unfold. For Florida Public Radio, I'm Lynn Hatter.
Domestic violence sufferers could soon have wider leeway to use statements made against their accusers during court proceedings. As Stan Jastrzebski reports, under a pair of bills moving through the legislature, the concept of hearsay could be amended to encourage more victims to name their abusers and bring them to trial.
First, a quick legal primer on hearsay. Merriam-Webster's dictionary defines hearsay evidence as evidence based not on a witness's personal knowledge, but on another's statement not made under oath. In other words, someone can't testify they heard a fact of a case from someone else. Only the person with direct knowledge can do that. But for years, says Florida State University Professor Emeritus of Law Chuck Earhart, courts had a hard time squaring hearsay rules with abuse cases.
50 years ago, nobody was ever prosecuted for child abuse. Once that came to the fore, then there was a pretty widespread unanimous judgment that we needed to recognize an exception to the hearsay rule for reliable statements by victims of child abuse.
Florida law now recognizes 24 hearsay exceptions. A 25th would be added if Naples Republican Representative Kathleen Passidomo's bill becomes law.
House Bill 429 is narrowly tailored. It's not overbroad. And it already passes constitutional muster, which is kind of different in this process. We've already got the U.S. Supreme Court telling us we can do this.
Passidomo's bill and a companion Senate version from Venice Republican Nancy Dietert would allow law enforcement to accept statements from domestic violence victims as evidence that could be used to try their alleged abusers. Florida Prosecuting Attorneys Association lobbyist Buddy Jacobs says that's as it should be, according to legal precedent.
The Florida Supreme Court has ruled that a prior inconsistent statement cannot be the sole substantive evidence for a conviction. This rationale likely applies to any inconsistent statement that may be admitted under this bill. Under this rationale, the evidence of the prior statement could be used as some evidence, but could not be the sole source of evidence to convict an individual.
But Florida Public Defenders Association lawyer Robert Trammell says it's not that simple.
Many, many years ago in handling domestic cases, I learned quickly that those types of situations lead to very, very emotional outbursts and that type of thing. So there is a real balancing act that we need to see.
Trammell cited Earhart, the author of a book called Florida Evidence, in his testimony before the House Judiciary Committee, claiming both the public defenders he represents and Earhart believe the bill is too broad. Jacobs, though, noted the irony of that statement.
This is too easy for me because what Mr. Trammell just did was use hearsay from Chuck Earhart. And I apologize. He threw me a soft one there, and I couldn't resist that.
Earhart says he had no idea he would be invoked in the committee, but does agree the bill could use some changes.
My suggestion is, and was and is, that if you're going to do that for domestic violence victims, it ought to be something similar to what we do for child abuse victims. That is to say that these statements, although they're hearsay, although they're out of court, are admissible if the judge determines the surrounding circumstances indicates that statement is reliable.
Trammell says his group has an amendment it plans to pitch to Passidomo, but he didn't elaborate on its contents. For Florida Public Radio, I'm Stan Jastrzebski.
Both chambers of the Florida legislature are pushing reforms when it comes to state regulation of the environment, but there's anything but a consensus when it comes to what constitutes a reform. Some call the proposals an affront to local sovereignty, while others call the moves just common sense. But as Ryan Bank reports, increasing differences between the Senate and House are leading some to wonder if any reform will happen this session.
Without the wetlands ordinance, this piece of property here, and remember there was four of them right in a row.
McCullough County Commissioner Howard Kessler sits in his car along a dirt road as it begins to rain. The street acts as a de facto dividing line between buildable property and land prohibited from being developed because of the county's wetland protection ordinance. The ordinance creates an extra layer of protection from development around wetlands. Kessler is at odds with his colleagues on the board, who call the ordinance duplicative and burdensome. Wakulla Commissioner Randy Merritt says it also violates individual property rights.
You cannot build your house without getting any closer than 35 feet to those wetlands, you know, without violating the wetlands, but you can't technically build the house without getting in 35 feet. You just can't build a house. So it makes your property useless.
In many ways, the small-bedroom community serves as a microcosm of a statewide fight going on 30 miles east in Tallahassee, where Panama City Republican Representative Jimmy Patronis and Newport Richey Republican Senator Wilton Simpson filed measures to scale back a local government's authority to regulate its environment and manage growth. Specifically, the companion bills preempt a county's attempts to adopt, revise, or implement extra regulations dealing with wetlands, springs, and stormwater facilities if said changes were proposed after July 2003. Proponents of the changes say they'll help streamline permitting and make conducting business easier. But Charles Pattison of 1,000 Friends of Florida, an environmental advocacy group, says counties have taken the lead in regulating their environments out of necessity.
When you look at the water quality situation around the state and you see what's happened with the strict reliance on state and federal permit controls, it's pretty easy to understand why many local governments would want to have some tighter control.
Pattinson says the bills are nothing more than attempts to usurp control from local governments in favor of large land developers and agricultural interests. He also finds the bill's permitting duration changes troubling. Both measures would allow water management districts to issue a 30-year-long permit to commercial water users. Pattinson calls preempting a county's voting procedure just another way the state is overreaching. Many counties have already instituted that type of rule, and in Wakulla County, an environmentalist-led voter referendum is seeking to do just that. Still, it isn't clear whether the companion bills will align before the end of the legislative session. For Florida Public Radio, I'm Ryan Bank.
You're listening to Capital Report from Florida Public Radio. I'm Tom Flanagan. Ronald J. Eben fast forwards to Monday and some of the major items likely to be up for debate and votes in the legislature.
As usual, activity won't pick up until late Monday morning with a meeting of the Health Care Appropriations Subcommittee on a bill that calls for the Department of Children and Families to create a certification program for recovery residences. The House Government Operations Subcommittee meets at 11:30. On the agenda, a human trafficking bill that exempts information that reveals the identity of the victims. It provides exemption from public records. The criminal history records of human trafficking victims have been ordered expunged. There's also a bill relating to off-highway vehicles, revising the terms ATV and ROV, and that they be prohibited from carrying an operator and more than a single passenger. Also before the subcommittee, there's a measure requiring all divers to prominently display a diver's down flag or buoy in the area in which the diving is occurring. There's a bill that prohibits the importation and sale of illegally imported lionfish, a measure requiring public accommodations to permit the use of a service animal by an individual with a disability. It also includes conditions under which a landlord may request documentation of a qualifying disability. The Senate Ethics and Elections Committee meets at 4 o'clock Monday. An online voter registration bill will be discussed that would require the Department of State to develop an online voter registration system. And those are some of the bills up for consideration Monday, March 31st. I'm Ronald J. Eben.
Finally tonight, some Florida lawmakers believe the state's laws need a reboot to catch up with advances in technology. Regan McCarthy reports part of that update includes a newer version of Florida's anti-hacking laws.
When it comes to mobile devices, Florida's hacking laws offer nary a peep, or maybe nary a tweet. And St. Cloud Republican Representative Mike LaRosa says that leaves people vulnerable.
Hacking today can range anywhere from tapping into to baby monitors, spying on people through their cameras on their TVs or their laptop computers, and ultimately seemingly endless data breaches from retailers and businesses. Hackers are able to get into microphones and cameras, cell phones, eavesdrop into conversations and and believe it or not, actually watch your movements.
Lawmakers passed the Florida Computer Crimes Act in 1978. LaRosa says that means newer technologies aren't covered by the rules. He's sponsoring a bill that would expand state statute to cover electronic devices, including many modern devices not typically thought of as computers. The measure also expands the definition of computer networks. But Florida State University computer science professor Mike Burmester says while he's glad to see the state making changes, he'd like to see lawmakers be more proactive. He says the technology they're making laws for today has been around for years. And Burmester says most electronic devices, such as cell phones or even pacemakers, are small computers anyway. They just perform more limited functions. He says he'd like to see the state make broader changes, protecting the way those devices store and transmit information, and offering protection for technology stored in what's called the cloud.
We need this kind of productivity. Technology is moving very fast now. And our life is driven by this technology, the technology can be abused. So it is important that we have some kind of protection from the state some kind of control which restricts abuse of technology.
Burmester says while accidentally downloading malware or even having personal information collected by someone you don't know can be alarming, that only scratches the surface of what someone with malicious intent could use technology to do.
There's no security. I can change. There are ways in which I can electronically have a negative impact on your pacemaker. Force your pacemaker to work the way it shouldn't and kill you. This technology, same with cars. The hacking into systems can be lethal.
Burmester says another example is a nuclear plant. Someone with ill intent could use technology to cause a plant to have a nuclear meltdown. And experts say as workers start using their cell phones or other mobile devices to do work there, that threat increases. And LaRosa's bill considers that.
The bill creates offenses against utilities, cracking down on hackers who would threaten the critical infrastructure systems and maintain our electric, water, and natural gas supplies.
Under the bill, someone who hacks into a public utility system could face up to a second-degree felony. Disrupting a medical device or vehicle could result in a first-degree felony charge. For Florida Public Radio, I'm Regan McCarthy.
Our regular Capitol Report correspondents are Sasha Cordner, Ronald J. Eben, Lynn Hatter, Stan Jastrzebski, Regan McCarthy, and Jessica Palumbo, along with Ryan Bank. We also thank our contributing Florida Public Radio stations. Technical assistance for Capitol Report is provided by Taylor Cox, and I'm Tom Flanagan. Follow us on Twitter at FPRCapReport. And join us again each weeknight during the 2014 Florida lawmaking session for more reports from the state capitol.
Audio copies of Capitol Report are available by calling 1-800-829-8809, extension 358. You can also hear Capitol Report online, including archives of past shows at fprn.org. Funding for Capitol Report is provided by the following: a grant from the law firm of Searcy, Denny, Scarola, Barnhart, and Shipley, supporting public radio and taking time to care, on the web at searcylaw.com. Tallahassee Regional Airport, offering service through Delta Airlines and Delta Connection partner ExpressJet, with direct flights from Tallahassee to Atlanta connecting to over 315 destinations worldwide. Fares and information available online at delta.com. And from Bryant Miller Olive, a law firm practicing government law, consulting and litigation, and public finance, serving Florida for over 40 years. Bryant Miller Olive, online at bmolaw.com. WFSU-FM, Tallahassee. This is Florida Public Radio.